Chapter 11, Offending Behavior, Taking Responsibility, Taking Control. Chances are if you're reading this book, you did something that got you in trouble. But what about afterwards? Did you step up and own your behavior? Can you admit what your real role was, or did you try to pass the blame? The point of this chapter is to not attack you or make you feel bad about yourself. What we want to do is show people that you have the power to make choices at every step of your situation. Even after you make a mistake and you have the power to regain control over your life, by accepting responsibility for your actions. Taking responsibility for your offenses or the hurt that you cause other people is simply a choice that you make. It's not magic. Taking responsibility is simply a decision, and it's not always easy, but either you stand up or you don't. Before continuing in this chapter, take a minute to do a check of your body. Do the words taking responsibility trigger any feelings, thoughts, or physical reactions? Do these words make you feel defensive or like you need to protect yourself? If they do, try taking a few deep breaths and relaxing. The way of the street, deny, deny, deny. Looking at your behavior honestly and accepting responsibility for your actions can be tough. We often believe that admitting our mistakes means we are weak. We become programmed to think that saying we were wrong means backing down. In fact, nothing could be farther from the truth. Owning your responsibility requires far more strength than running from a situation. You have to be more of a man or woman to accept responsibility. And being a real man or woman requires you to own your actions. If you want the monkey off your back, you have to come clean. Stop and think. Ask yourself, honestly, how you deal with making a mistake. Do you automatically try to get out of trouble by denying or lying? Has this worked for you in the past? Do you usually see yourself as set up by other people? Do you take responsibility for your actions and choices? Do you fool yourself about your involvement and responsibility by always making excuses? Giving guilt the slip. You might be stuck in a pattern of thinking that goes like this. So what if I stole from that store? They aren't going to miss that CD. They make so much money that this CD is nothing to them. It's not like I stole it from a person. I bet they never even noticed it missing. They rip people off by charging way too much for these things anyway. Sounds familiar? This is the kind of talk a person does in their minds to try to convince themselves that the mistake they made isn't a big deal. It's called rationalization, and it's a way that we try to talk ourselves out of feeling guilty. It's a way of making something wrong seem right. This kind of thinking is extremely dangerous because it allows us not to feel guilty doing something that is wrong. So what is guilt? Troy, 16 years old. I don't feel guilty for no one. Ain't nobody feel guilty about me. When we talk about guilt, we don't mean the legal guilt, like when you go to court. We mean the kind of guilt you feel or should when you've done something wrong. Believe it or not, guilt is a healthy feeling. Feeling healthy guilt helps us make good choices and allows us to control our behavior. Guilt can guide us to behaviors that are honest, respectful, and just. But sometimes we become numb to our healthy guilt. Becoming numb to our healthy guilt is extremely dangerous. It sets you up on a dangerous cliff with no net. Having no guilt lets you stop taking responsibility for your behavior, even in the privacy of your own mind. You become deaf to the voice of your conscience. Inner voice that tells you when you have done something wrong. The longer you are deaf to guilt, the harder it becomes to take responsibility for your actions. The three A words you need to know. For some of you, even those convicted of an offense, you may never have admitted to yourself what you did. Many kids who have been arrested and punished in some way for their negative behavior become so defensive that a real conversation about their feelings of guilt is not possible. They become masters of getting away with things, pulling cons, and denying their involvement. Cornel West, a professor at Harvard, once said that for many kids, the 11th commandment is thou shalt not get caught. If this sounds familiar to you, for the rest of this chapter, try and take a vacation from those thoughts until you finish reading. When you commit an offense, you violate the rights of others and give away your power and respect. Restoring balance and healing from that mistake is a process. It is possible to serve your entire sentence and never really close the chapter on your offense. So how do you really move beyond your mistake? We believe the first three steps in dealing with your offense are what we call the three A words. The three A words. Acknowledging what your real role was in the offense. Accepting responsibility for your behavior. Apologizing to your victim or the people hurt by your actions. Step 1, being honest with yourself, acknowledging. Derek, 15 years old. It wasn't my fault, man. It was the weed. The first step of taking control over your behavior is to acknowledge what you did. Sounds like a big word, but it's simple. It just means to be truthful about your role in the offense. To do this, you need to be completely honest about the way you operate. To acknowledge your role, just answer this question. Did you do it? Look into your heart, ask yourself, what was your real role? Step 2, moving beyond accepting responsibility. If you accept responsibility, then you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I did something wrong. If you have to use with the word but, you are not accepting responsibility. If you say, yeah, I did it, but he deserved it. Or, yeah, I beat her up, but she started it. Or, yeah, I stole it, but I needed it. Or, yeah, I was there, but I was just a lookout. You are not accepting responsibility. Go back to step 1. In order to move beyond your offense history, you have to be totally honest with yourself about what you have done and the price you and others have to pay, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. This can be difficult because thinking about our negative actions can bring up really painful feelings. It might call up what others have said about us in the past. We knew he'd end up in jail, or that girl is rotten to the bone. If you admit your responsibility, you might ask yourself what kind of a person would do a thing like that. These negative feelings can be so powerful that we will almost do anything to avoid experiencing them. If we convince ourselves we didn't do something wrong or hurtful, when we did, we can avoid feeling the uncomfortable feelings that go along with knowing that we did hurt someone. Some of you might be spending a lot of energy and time trying to convince yourself that you are not responsible for your mistakes. But unless you come to terms with these feelings, they become like a weight that will drag you down. Arnold, 16 years old. For real, it feels great to come clean and be honest. You don't want to be keeping something inside you that you're all worried about, having a lot of nightmares, bad dreams, and everything else. When you release it to a person or to a group of people that you trust, it feels good. Your body feels free and you don't care about it no more. It's out of your mind and it's out of your heart. Growing up emotionally and spiritually requires us to take responsibility. If we don't take responsibility, we stay stuck. Taking responsibility allows us to grow up, to grow wiser and stronger. Unhealthy guilt. Sometimes healthy guilt turns into unhealthy guilt. How do you know the difference? Well, healthy guilt is a signal that something you did is wrong. It is our conscience kicking in and keeping us straight. Unhealthy guilt is beating yourself up over and over again for something that happened in the past. It's like driving your car into mud and getting stuck there. Every time you hit the gas, you sink deeper and deeper until you can't move. Feeling unhealthy guilt is like turning against yourself. It creates a lot of tension and negative energy that you need to release. Many times that tension gets released by getting involved in a high risk or offending activity that brings on more trouble and more unhealthy guilt. If you're not on top of it, unhealthy guilt turns into shame. And we know that shame does nothing but eat away at your self-esteem, your power, and your ability to deal with things the right way. So how do you get rid of unhealthy guilt? Well, the first step is to come clean about the negative acts that made you feel guilty in the first place. Acknowledge. The next step is to accept responsibility for those actions and to apologize. Even if you can't talk to the victim, we'll talk more about apology later. The next step is to forgive yourself for what you did. Only through forgiveness can you see your mistakes for what they were, attempts to get the power, acceptance, and love you felt you were missing. We'll talk more about apology and forgiveness later. Stop and think. Your offense history. Without beating yourself up, try and remember all of the offending behavior you have been involved in. The big offenses might come to mind first, but try and think of the small things like jumping turnstiles and stealing candy bars. How old were you the first time you committed an offense? What is the most serious thing you've done? Holding on to offending, what I get out of it. No matter where you're at in terms of your legal or criminal record, take some time to look at the types of negative power trips you may use in your daily life. These behaviors could include intimidating, lying, cheating, threatening, controlling others, and using violence. And most important, you need to stop for a minute and realize why you use these behaviors. On some level, pushing your weight around and using negative power tactics has gotten you what you want at least some of the time. If you're jealous and insecure about your girlfriend hanging out with other men, you might have beat her up to scare her. If you want to send the message to another kid that you are not to be messed with, you try to intimidate her. If you want a bike but you don't have the money for it, you take one. And if you get what you want each time you pull a negative power act, then why stop? Fortunately, you're smart enough to know that getting things this way has some major drawbacks. You realize that if you continue to lead this type of lifestyle, you'll always be looking over your shoulder, just waiting to get busted. Part of you, even if it's only the quiet voice of self, sees the problem with getting things through negative power acts. Most people who get things this way end up in prison, ashamed, dead, in trouble with their families, and watching their backs. The impact of crime and abuse. Seeing your victim. Joshua, 17 years old. As long as I can't see the victim, it's like it never happened. Real honesty means seeing all of what we have done. Only then can we learn from our past and move on to the emotional freedom that the truth will give us. The act of taking responsibility connects us with self, even if we don't think about it like that. Part of being entirely honest about your offense is looking at how your behavior impacted your victim. Being the victim of abuse, violence, or death can emotionally damage a person for years. Victims of violent crimes may have trouble going to work, socializing with friends, or sleeping in their homes. They may relive the crime over and over, never trusting that they will be safe again. In the period right after a crime, most victims are overwhelmed with feelings of confusion, helplessness, terror, and vulnerability. These feelings are usually followed with feelings of anger, guilt, suspicion, depression, and self-doubt. There are questions that might haunt a victim for a lifetime. Why me? Is the offender coming back? What could I have done to stop it from happening? Victims often feel that God has left them to fend for themselves. Being in the victim's shoes. Justin, 16 years old. I remember being real young and coming into my house and seeing the place tore up. It was like the third or fourth time we were robbed, but this time it looked like a tornado ripped through it. My shit was everywhere. They took the TV and the VCR. They even took some of my sister's toys. What the hell did they want toys for? My mother was crying and running around. My sister and brothers were crying too. When I started robbing people, I never thought about how it would make them feel. I just shut my mind off to that and thought about how much we'd get from them. I don't think of them as real people in a way. Sometimes people who have been victimized end up victimizing others. By being the one who assaults, steals, or vandalizes, people feel they take on a powerful role and get rid of the weaker, vulnerable feelings they had as a victim. But victimizing is false power. It makes you a victim over and over again because each time we hurt or violate others, we dim the light on our true self. We betray ourselves. We hurt our families, and it sometimes results in our freedom being handed over to others. Pebbles in the pond. Donnell, 17 years old. When I robbed those two guys, I made them victims. I made their families victims because of how they were scared about their kid. I made my mom a victim because she was upset and angry. Plus, she had to find the money for my bail when she didn't have no money. The people in the hood was victims too, because they wasn't letting their kids out because they were scared it might happen to them. Ever thrown a rock into water? The rock enters the water in one place and makes a splash. Then ripples start moving out from the center and the circle becomes larger and larger. This is called the ripple effect. The same idea applies to any type of offense that you commit against someone. Think about someone who is the victim of a violent crime. Let's say that a man is stabbed and robbed on his way to the store. He spends several weeks in the hospital recovering. Every night he wakes up from terrifying nightmares as the attack gets played out over and over again in his mind. Now he is afraid to leave the house. He misses so much work that he is fired. His family has a hard time paying their bills, and his wife has to go out and get a job. The kids are scared and confused because their family seems to be falling apart. He becomes very depressed. Other people in the community start to feel scared to go out at night because they worry about getting attacked. Although you might think that an act of violence only affects the victim, that's not true. It affects everybody who is in that person's life. Stop and think. Take a minute and think back on the most serious offense you committed or an act that affected a person in a negative way. Who else besides the victim suffered because of your actions? What did the mother, father, aunt, uncles, sisters, brothers, friends, grandparents, children, or wife or husband of the victim feel? Truly acknowledging our role and accepting responsibility means that we understand all of the people who were affected by our action, not just the primary victim. The victim, grandparents, aunts, uncles, workplace, community, friends, parents, siblings, your action. Stop and think. Look at the chart. It shows how crime is like a bicycle wheel with the spokes moving out from the center. Your offense is in the middle, with the people close to the victim being touched by what you did. For each of the people listed in the chart, think about the consequences that they experienced because of your actions. Nonviolent crimes, a bigger deal than you might think. Some of you reading this chapter on victims might be saying to yourself, "Hey, that's not me. I'm just in this place for selling drugs. My crime didn't have any victim. They wanted drugs, and all I did was to sell the stuff to them." Think again. We once asked the following questions to a group of kids in a group. Do nonviolent crimes like selling drugs or stealing from a large company have victims? We were surprised at how quickly they said yes. We then asked them to explain what they meant, and this is basically what they said. Selling hard drugs always hurts someone, because they mess that person up and the person using them is an addict who is suffering because of what you gave them. If you are selling drugs to kids, you are doing the same as killing them because you might as well be dead than to be a junkie. You might try to rationalize your behavior and say, "Well, if I didn't sell it to them, someone else would have." The bottom line is that someone else didn't supply them. You did. Seeing this is part of standing up and accepting responsibility for your actions. Jamel, 17 years old. I was selling crack before I got here. There was this one lady who was always coming around me buying. She was a real crackhead, always wearing nasty clothes with some crazy ass hair. Anyway, I was doing this girl that I really liked. This shorty was hot. She was in my crib one day. I heard the door knock, and when I looked outside, it was this crackhead lady. When I opened the door, my shorty said, "What's my mom doing here?" And I was like, "Oh shit, that's messed up. I'm selling crack to her mother." I felt real bad. I felt real guilty about it. Stealing from a company also means there are victims. Even if you think your actions are small and don't matter, they do. You might not be able to see the face of your victims, but he or she is there. Telling yourself that the company has lots of money and that they will not miss the money is just more rationalizing. No matter how faceless, powerless, or rich your victim is, the fact is still the same. Every act of victimization, no matter how invisible it might seem, is on you. It weakens your backbone. It weakens your integrity. Getting this is part of accepting responsibility for your actions. Step 2, apologizing. Shanila, 16 years old. Me and my friend were friends since we were 6 years old, but no more. When I turned 15 years old, I slept with my friend's man. I knew she liked him, but I didn't care. I kept up the relationship behind her back. She always suspected it, but I lied and never told her the truth. After a while, she found out about it from other people, but it should have been me to come clean. Her own best friend. I always thought I can just take what I wanted in life. It hurts me that I lost a friend like that for a guy I didn't even love. I think it would have been better to be honest with her. Sometimes I wish she would talk to me so that I can apologize to her. I feel bad that I hurt her. Once I wrote her a letter saying how I was sorry. I didn't mail it, but just talking out what was in my heart made me feel better. Once you have taken the brave steps of acknowledging to yourself what you have done to hurt others, and after you have truly accepted responsibility for those acts, admitting you did something wrong, you're almost ready for the next step. The next step is to apologize to the person you have hurt. You might not be able to speak to your victim directly, and contact with the person you violated might not even be a good idea. However, in order to move toward your own healing and empowerment, you must truly apologize for the harm you caused your victim, even if you can't say it directly to them. Many things stop us from apologizing. If you watch little kids in the playground, you can see how early it starts. One kid might push another one or grab a toy away from him. His mother might tell him to say sorry, but he won't. He looks at the ground, he gets an angry look on his face, and says that he didn't do anything wrong. If you have never really apologized before, the first few times you try it might feel strange to you. But just like other things in this book, new things only feel strange for a little while. Some kids refuse to apologize because they are angry at their victim for telling on them or turning them in. Some of them even have said that they plan to get revenge on their victim when they get out. This is big-time rationalizing. By making the victim wrong, you can feel okay about your offense. You can even fool yourself into thinking that the victim victimized you by turning you in. It's an eye for an eye thinking, and it will leave you blind. Stop and think. What do you think about apologizing? Do you see it as something that makes you stronger or weaker? Do you see it as giving power to someone else or as making you a stand-up person? Have you ever seen anyone truly apologize for something he or she did? Do people in your family apologize to one another when they make mistakes? Is it sincere? We've all heard someone offer an insincere apology. That means they say sorry, but we know it's just a line. Maybe they look at you and say, "Sorry, my bad," but you know they don't really mean it. You can't fake an apology and have it do the work of really freeing you. To truly apologize, you need to consider the pain of your victim. What usually keeps us from apologizing is not wanting to take responsibility for what we've done. It can be very hard for us to really accept some of the things we have done. We do not want to accept responsibility because we are ashamed. But once we really believe that the self is good, kind, and lovable, no matter what we have done, we can see for real that our actions are separate from ourselves. Taking responsibility for our negative behavior does not make you a bad person. It makes you a strong one. Apologizing without expectations. Gerald, 16 years old. I was going to say sorry, but he was all hating on me, so forget it. I ain't apologizing. Apologizing sets you free, but only if it is done from the heart and without any expectations. You do it because it's right. You do it to release the burden. But don't assume that your apology will be accepted. If you do, you are setting yourself up to get an attitude if your apology is refused. Even if the other person is not ready to forgive, it has nothing to do with the steps you need to take for your own healing. You can still apologize. You can still forgive yourself. The people you hurt may not be ready to let go of their anger. They may be too frightened or wounded to let go of their anger. Allow them to be where they are. Respect their right to feel the way they do. It's okay to want them to forgive you, but we can never force a person to do this. Don't get caught up in needing their forgiveness in order to let go of unhealthy guilt. Ways to apologize. Apologizing can take many forms. It can be conversations with the person you hurt, face-to-face, or by phone. It can also be done through a letter. Although many kids find writing difficult or unpleasant to do, it lets you really plan what you want to say. Writing. Writing a letter of apology can be a very powerful way to express your feelings about what you have done. Even if you throw the letter away or never send it, Putting your feelings and thoughts into words on paper can help you move down the path of healing. When Tony Hicks was 14 years old, he shot and killed an 18-year-old pizza delivery man named Tariq Camisa. Tony had a lot of problems in school and at home. His mother and father had abandoned him, and he was being raised by his grandfather. Soon, Tony started hanging out with the gang in San Diego. They got together and smoked some marijuana and drank beers. When they ran out of beer money, they stole what they wanted. One night, they decided that they would order two pizzas, distract the delivery guy, snatch the pizzas, and take off. When they began their mission, they brought along the 9mm gun that Tony had stolen from his grandfather's house. Instead of conning the delivery guy and running off with the food, Tony pulled the gun and threatened him to hand over the pizzas or else. When Tariq said no and started to drive away, Tony shot and killed him. Prior to his conviction, this is what Tony said about the murder. Q-Tip, another gang member, started shouting at me, "Bust him, Bone, bust him." So I did. I pulled the trigger. The 9 kicks hard. The window broke and the pizza man yelled. Blood was coming out of him. I knew he was hurt bad. It was all cool. I didn't think I was going to get in trouble. Only homeboys saw what happened and they weren't going to snitch. When questioned by the police, Tony told them that the pizza man had been stupid for not giving up the pizzas. He had been killed for $27.24 worth of food. Tariq had been very close to his father, a man named Azeem. Although Azeem was devastated by his son's death, he did not feel hatred in his heart for Tony. As he saw it, two lives had been destroyed because of this senseless act of violence, his sons and the shooters. Azeem did not spend his time hating Tony and wanting him to be punished. Instead, he saw Tony for the angry and confused boy he was. Tariq's father forgave him for taking his son's life. He started a foundation to help children and teens find nonviolent solutions to problems and worked closely with Tony's grandfather, making the project happen. Through Azeem's forgiveness, Tony was able to accept responsibility for killing Tariq. Eventually, Tony felt deep empathy for the father whose son he killed. This is the letter he wrote to the judge before he was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. "Good morning, Judge. On January 21st, 1995, I shot and killed Tariq Camiso, a person I didn't even know and who didn't do anything wrong to me. On April 11th, 1996, I pled guilty to first-degree murder because I am guilty. I wanted to save the Camiso family and my family from further pain. From my grandfather, I have learned about the Camisa family and their only son, Tariq. I have learned about the love they have for him. Through my grandfather and Mr. Reynolds, they have tried to explain to me the compassion the Camisa family has for me. I've had a lot of problems in my life. Over the last year, while in juvenile hall, I have thought about my problems. I wish I didn't have the type of life I had. I wish I had a relationship with my father. I think about the warmth my grandfather gave me. I wonder why I didn't listen and learn. Now, I wish I would have listened to my grandfather. At night, when I'm alone, I cry and beg God to let me out of here. Promise him that I will be a better person. I won't mess up. When I see my mom, I want to hold her as tight as I can and beg her, take me out of jail. However, I don't want to use my problems as an excuse for my actions. I think I would have gone to jail sometime, but I honestly don't think getting busted for a robbery or something like that would have changed me. I was too mad at everyone. My mom, my dad, my grandfather. When I first came to the hall, I was mad at the DA and the people at the hall for keeping me here. Now I'm just scared and mad at myself. I'm alone in juvenile hall. Even though the people at the hall are pretty cool, I'm still alone. I often think about the night I shot Tariq, especially when I'm alone in my cell. When it's dark and quiet, I wonder what it's like to die. I wonder why I'm still alive. Sometimes when I roll over in bed, I lay next to the cold wall. I feel as far away from everything as possible. I wonder if that's what dying feels like. I still don't know why I shot Tariq. I didn't really want to hurt him or anyone else. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for killing Tariq and hurting his family. I'm sorry for the pain that I caused for Tariq's father, Mr. Kamisu. I pray to God every night that Mr. Kamisu will forgive me for what I have done. And for as long as I live, I will continue to pray to God to give him the strength to deal with his loss. My grandfather promised me that he will be Mr. Kamisu's friend and help him in any way that he can for the rest of his life. I am very sorry for what I have done. Thank you for giving me the chance to speak. Make it right. Apologizing is something you've got to do to really stand up and take responsibility for your offense or mistake. But it isn't always the final step. If it is possible, you need to repair the damage you did by paying back. When you can, make it right. This might happen in a lot of different ways. If you stole money from someone, return it. If you spent the money, then work to get the money to repay the person. If you stole an item that can't be replaced, find out how much it costs and give the person the amount of money. If you started a rumor about someone and it hurt them or their reputation, you need to fix it by coming straight. Sometimes we won't see our victim again, but we know that we have wronged someone. If this is the case for you, try repairing the damage by doing something kind for someone else. It won't undo the damage you did to your victim, but it will help someone else, and that's a powerful thing. Many people believe that the things you just read about in this chapter, admitting or acknowledging your offense, accepting responsibility for your offense, apologizing, and repairing the damage in whatever way possible, can leave you with a great feeling of freedom. It is like a weight has been lifted from you. Now, find a place where you feel comfortable. Take 3 deep breaths and feel your body relaxing. Picture yourself carrying a large box on your back. It is heavy and you feel smashed down from having it on your body for so long. You were instructed that to remove the box, you must admit your wrongdoing, accept responsibility, apologize, and pay back in whatever way you can. You have done these things. It was difficult, but you succeeded. Now imagine the box being lifted from your back. As the weight comes off, you feel your body rise up. You feel taller and stronger. You walk with a new feeling of dignity and respect. Your eyes, which have looked hollow and dead, become alive. There is a power shining from them.